haven't finished that shiur, but
I'll get you the hot water.
Yeah, Jeff, you don't mind? Just
I thought you said you were in hot water.
I'm always in hot water, but this is for drinking purposes. The hot water that I'm in the rest of the week is not drinkable. Yeah. All right. So, Rav Osai, let's first finish up what we started yesterday in Rav Ariyav's Chidushim here on page 21. Now, what you may recall is that according to one group of Rishonim, which he identifies as the Rosh HaMedaber, Rabbeinu David, yeah, 30 to 33, I think we said, right? Right now, I'm saying, I just, you know, if you give me more, that's even great. I won't have to bother.
You have 10 pages.
Okay, great. So according to Rabbeinu David, and this is an interesting paradox, neither the maskir, thank you so much, neither the maskir nor the socher are chayev in bal yirah bal yimotzei. And this is what we called falling between the cracks. The maskir is not chayev in bal yirah bal yimotzei because the Torah says lo yimotzei. Yimotzei means it's got to be motzui. And it's out of his rishus. He's already rented his house. So he has no access to the chometz. The socher, on the other hand, is not chayev in a violation of Bayi Rabbi Yimotzi because it's not shalom. He doesn't own the chametz in Choshe Mishpat terms. So we have two conditions, both of which have to be fulfilled in order to violate Bayi Rabbi Yimotzi. It's got to be shalom, and it's got to be bershusam. And therefore, in the case of maskir and socher, on a doraisa level, meaning if there was no bittul, no one would be chayv in bedika, because no one is vulnerable, no one is exposed to the violation of Bayi Rabbi Yimotzi. The maskir because it's not pershuso, and the socher because it's not shalom. However, once there was bittul, now we have no problem on a deraisal level, and in this case, even if there was no bittul, we have no problem on a deraisal level. So the institution now of bedika is derabbanan. Hence, the Gemara is safek, vacillating back and forth between the maskir and the socher, is with regard to this derabbanon, this mitzvah derabbanon called bedika. And once again, we're going to have to analyze what are the two tzadim, and we could go with the Rashash right now for the time being and say that the maskir should be chayv bedika because he might. Well, again, it's a little bit difficult now. Why would it? See, the socher makes sense because it's Shemi Yovel Yoch. Okay, that point he doesn't address. So let's leave that on the side for the time being. We haven't worked out all the glitches yet. In the second paragraph, which we did not get up to yesterday, he quotes Rabbeinu Peretz. Rabbeinu Peretz is of the opinion that in the absence of bittul, the maskir does in fact violate Bal Yirah Bal Yimotzei, meaning the Rabbeinu Peretz does not sign on to this chiddush of Rabbeinu David that you need a second condition to be fulfilled in order to violate Bal Yirah Bal Yimotzei, namely that it be bershuso. It's enough that it's shalom. The Torah says lo yirah lecha, and if it's lecha, then the maskir violates Bal Yirah Bal Yimotzei. Now keep in mind that, as we discussed at great length on a number of occasions, we have the Vilna Gaon, and yesterday we added the Pnei Yoshua. They're of the opinion against Rabbeinu Peretz that Rashi would identify the socher as the one who violates Bal Yirah Bal Yimotzei if there was no bittul. And the reason for that is because the socher is holding on to the chometz of Yisrael. And chemtzo shel Yisrael achim v'shuscho, it's not like acherim. Acherim means a goy, where you have the bias of a goy, and therefore you violate Bal Yirah Bal Yimotzei. So let's just summarize three shitos now. Bless you. We have the shita Rabbeinu David, that neither the maskir nor the socher violate Bal Yirah Bal Yimotzei. We have the shita Rabbeinu Peretz that clearly it's the maskir who's going to violate Bal Yirah Bal Yimotzei, not the socher. And then we have the chiddush of the gaon where only the socher violates Bal Yirah Bal Yimotzei. And the reason for that is because of chemtzo shel Yisrael acher birshus Yisrael. Now there's a paragraph here that starts with the word ach, and I read it a few times. I'm convinced that there's some sort of a typo here. He says, "Ach berashi yotzi shasocher eino over." This is not true. I mean, we
socher
just
over. It should
right. It could be that there's what there are a few lines that are missing here, and that's the Magen Avraham. He mentions, if you'll see in a very short paragraph, the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham thinks that maybe the maskir transfers ownership over the chametz to the socher. What does that mean? That if I rent you an apartment, and now you can be kona with a kinyan chatzer, anything that's in the apartment, if I agree, again we have to know if I have to agree explicitly or tacitly, then anything that's in the apartment that's not, you know, not furniture or something, you know, stationary, but things like chametz, if I left it deliberately in the house, I am therefore transferring it over to you, and that's why the socher is kona min hahefker. He, the socher, now becomes responsible for Bal Yerah Bayim Motzei. Again, this chiddush of the Magen Avraham has to be taken under advisement. It's a separate topic. We have a principle that chotz mitam shlichus, and there's no shlichus bal karcho. There's no reason in the world why the socher at this point in time, Erev Pesach, wants to pick up ownership over chametz. On the contrary, the socher says to the maskir, you know, take your rubbish and pack out. I'm not interested in your leftover chametz. So that Magen Avraham has to be understood. How could chatzah be kone against the will of someone? You know, we have a principle of chatzer shalom kone shalom midaito, but not neged daito, because chatzah has to operate through what we call an upstandic minu shlichus, which is shlucho shalom kemoso, but that's only in a case of zochen liadam shalom b'fanav, right? So even if I didn't ask you to be zochen on my behalf, you could be zochen on my behalf, but that's because it's a zchus. But I wouldn't say that the chotzer operating as zochen liadam shalom b'fanav would be kona on behalf of the socher against his will. That's not zochen liadam shalom b'fanav. The last thing I want is your chametz. Yeah.
As you throw the get into the chatzer of the Isha,
right?
Then it's not necessarily.
That's only because a get is chal bal korcha, meaning we don't require das in the case of kabbalas haget.
Ah.
I mean, that's a sensitive topic to discuss today in the modern world. But that's the Torah law. You know, this is when the Torah gets tough as nails. It's exeris hakos. So there's no din of das or Isha. Again, there are all sorts of charamim and later takanas, but I'm talking on a deraisa level. So therefore, the chatzer is now an extension of the isha, as far as v'nosan biyada, machatzera yada, afkol yada. So the chatzer now becomes a yad, and we don't need das. But in a classic case of dini mominus, my chatzer will not serve as my yad to be zochan me unless it's a pure zchus. So let's say, for example, a bird of hefker that has some worth to it would land in my chatzer in a way that it's confined in the chatzer, which is called the chatzer mishtameres, then I can be zochem, he didn't zochem the other front, so the chatzer is my representative. But not in the case of chametz. Who wants chametz on Erev Pesach? So that Magen Avraham needs a separate discussion. I'm not prepared for that. But in the next paragraph, he says the following, V'nireh sherashi l'shitaso. Rashi could understand that the socher is the one who makes bittul. Again, we vacillated back and forth. Rashi says that our Gemara is not dealing with pre-bittul, meaning we're talking after bittul, says Rashi. Now, who did the bittul? It's not clear in Rashi who is the mavatel. One possibility is that the socher is mavatel. Again, why would the socher be the one to make bittul? Because of the Gra, right?
Right.
Right? He's violating Bal Yerah Bayim Motzei, so we want to make sure that he does Bittul. So the Rashiva here claims that you can only understand this Rashi in the light of what I call the Ramban. We spent a great deal of time trying to understand Bittul according to the Ramban. And we said that Bittul is a kind of Eino rotza b'kiyumo. In other words, I don't want this chametz. Hashem is putting the chametz into my rishus, and I'm saying, God, I don't want it. That's called bittul. Tosus, on the other hand, identifies bittul as hefker. If Rashi would have accepted Tosus's definition of bittul, he'd be in big trouble, again, on the premise that the socher is making the bittul, because how can you be mafkir chametz, in this case, that doesn't belong to you? But if on the other hand the Torah says in the shame chametz, you know, the entity of chametz as a chefted surah, the Torah says that it's yours, and in this case because it's chemto shel yisrael acher b'shuscha, so it's lo yimotze b'shuscha, you know, chametz shel yisrael acher. Oh, now you have to make a declaration that you don't want this chametz. It's Eino Rotsa B'Kiyumo, and it's Mesiach Das, and it's Mashpiso Belibo, and it's Kafir Diara, and all of these concepts which Ramban made such a big deal about. So Rabbosai, if we want to know whether Rashi accepts the definition of Bittul of the Ramban, or that of Tosfos, here's going to be the proof. If you assume, again there's a big if, that according to Rashi, in the context of his discussion of Maskir and Socher, and he says that there was Bittul, that Rashi's assuming it was the Socher who did the Bittul, then you're going to have to identify Rashi with the Ramban's definition of Bittul, as opposed to Tosfos' definition of Bittul. In other words, there's no way, no how, that you can identify Rashi's Bittul on the part of the Socher with the Ramban, with the Shita Tosfos, that Bittul equals Hefker. That's an impossibility. That's untenable, because there's no such thing as being mafkir, someone else's property. At the end of this paragraph, he says, Efshal lomar, sha socher, afshal chomis bershuso, the overall. Please underline those two words. I mean, that proves to me that there's a typo here in this paragraph. Because at the beginning of the paragraph, he says, eino over. And now he says, over olav. And he's referring to Bal Yerov Ba'imotze. This is the sheet of the gun. Somehow, at the beginning of the paragraph, he reflects the sheet of the Mogen Avraham, and then at the end, okay, I'm just pointing that out to you. For me, that's important because I like to plow through this and see if I can figure out what he's saying. He says, "Mikol makom imash biso milibo." Even though the socher is liable now for Bal Yerov Ba'imotze, but nevertheless, if he's mashbis the chometz b'libo, and basically he declares that he doesn't want to have anything to do with this chometz, then through that kiyum of mitzvahs tashbisu, he saves himself, protects himself from Bal Yerov Ba'imotze. And all that is on a d'oraisa level. So again, when Rashi says that this sugya of maskir and socher, the boiler who is not talking about a d'oraisa bedika, because there already was bittul, and now we're assuming that it's the socher who was mevatel, so now we jack up the issue to a drabbanon level. We've already covered the Doraisa because the Socher, who's liable for Bal Yerov Ba'imotze, was Mavatel, and he said, Amisir Das, and then he wrote to be Kiyumo. Now we want to know, what about the nature of Bedika? Who, on a Darabonon level, did the Rabbanon, upon whom did the Rabbanon impose this Chiyuv Bedika? And what we try to suggest earlier is that it really depends upon how you define the Chiyuv Bedika. If it's the bias, if it's inherent in the bias, then the maskir is the one who owns the bias. If on the other hand it's the one who's living with the chametz, or alternatively the one who on a deraisa level, had there not been bittul, would have violated Bal Yerov Ba'imotze, then we shift the responsibility of Bedika over to the socher, because we're assuming, like the Vilna Gaon, that according to Rashi, the socher is liable for Bal Yerov Ba'imotze insofar as he has chemtzah shel Yisrael Acher Bershusa. So again, the maskir is going to be chayv min rabbanon because it's his bias. That's why Rashi continuously puts the emphasis on who owns the bias. The socher is going to be chayv insofar as he's the one who before the bittul was liable for a violation of Bal Yerov. Is that word correct? Sam, you help me with the English. Liable? How do you say? Culpable, liable, what would be the word? I don't, one of those. Anyway.
Above good legal terms.
Just that a lot of people around me, including my better half,
culpable,
are always telling me that I make up words as I go along. You know, when I was in college and graduate school, I had a pretty good English. You won't believe it, because you hear my English today. You know,
there's a major legal difference, because culpable implies guilt as well. But over here, they're both good.
Right. Jeff, you wanted to say something?
No, I wanted to say.
Yes, okay. Sam,
I need to clarify something. Okay, look, I'm going to take the gra, okay? That you're liable on chemter of another Jew, right?
Right.
Okay? And you were dodging yesterday in terms of what the rationale is, but offhand, how can you be mevatel that? Now, can I be mevatel and say that it's like offer somebody?
So wait,
else's
Sam,
stuff?
Were you here when we discussed the Ramban? That's why I don't remember. Okay, so let me just recap the Ramban. Again, this was hours and hours of discussion. The Ramban is saying that we're not talking about Choshen Mishpat. What we're talking about is the Torah says that this chametz is on your reshus. You want it to exist. I'm going to make it yours. It's not yours.
Okay, but I don't.
Now
want
you
it
declare
to
I don't want it to exist. That's the bittul of the soul.
If it's somebody else's, I have no interest in it existing or not existing. Right, if we're saying that
so that was the question I think you asked me yesterday.
But I thought I heard you repeat it again now. The bittul will help in such a case.
No. I'm saying there's no question that bittul will help.
Bittul will help for the gra for an other Jew's chametz.
Correct.
And what am I saying?
I'm saying that I don't want the existence of this chametz. Now, I got to understand him. Now we have to go backwards to your question of yesterday.
Yes, that's what I'm saying about.
So again, I'm just going to obfuscate it, you know. To
okay.
Comfort.
So if you want to keep it, you don't have to answer.
No. I'm just going to obfuscate. I'm going to say the following.
Okay.
That somehow after Pesach, he has vested interest. Why? Because he's going to say to the Israel, "Here's your chametz back." Now again, it's a little tricky because he never accepted a krayas on the chametz. So if he doesn't have a krayas on the chametz, where's his vested interest in returning this chametz after Pesach? So for this, you have to know he has a whole piece here called. That's the very next. No, I'm sorry, it's not the next piece, but I just want to point this to you. It's called Kabbalah Sachrayas. This is number hey. You know, this is the. No, actually, no. The word hey here is referring to the Gemara Daf Hey. It doesn't mean number 5. I don't know what number it is. Anyway, Kabbalah Sachrayas. So there's something called Hanach Lefanai. Again, I'm not a bucky in the Sunni, but I'm just off the top of my head. I want to say the following. There are 3 levels of Achrayis. 2 of them fit under the category of Shomer, and the 3rd fits under the category of called Hanach Lefanai. What does that mean? So let's say, Sam, you have Chametz, so you want to deposit it in my Rishus. So I can say 1 of 3 things. I can say, number 1, pay me for that. You like people on storage houses, you know, they pay rental.
In which case, you're responsible.
I'm responsible to the highest level, which is called Gneva Vaveda. If it's stolen, I have to replace it. Then there's another level. That's called a Shomer Chinu, in which I say, look, I'm not going to take money from you. I'm going to be very magnanimous, and I'm going to take upon myself a Chrayas. Now, if you take upon yourself a Chrayas without getting paid, that's the lowest level of achrayus. In which case, you're not chayef for gneva veda, but you're chayef for a pshia of the lowest level of pshia. I'll try to explain to you what I mean by that. Then there's a 3rd possibility, which is not Torah Shomrim at all, in which I say to you, Sam, you know what? This is my house. Find yourself a corner and drop your chametz there. That's not called achrayus.
Give me permission. Yeah.
But what it means is that I'm going to return that object to you when you come. I may have to notify you, come and pick it up. Again, I probably should have made a contract with you that by Erev Pesach, the 5th hour, you come and collect your chametz. But whatever, I didn't make such a contract. I have to return the object. Now here, I'd only be chayav for the most intense level of pshia. You follow what I'm saying?
Wouldn't be chayav?
What do you say?
If it's for a guy, I wouldn't be chayav.
I don't know. That you have to ask me in a minute, but let me just see. I'm focused on trying to set up 3 levels here. So you'll ask me about a guy in a minute. My brain can't focus on guy now. Let me get by the Jew. So what I'm suggesting is that with a Shomer Chinam situation, the Shomer actually makes some sort of a kinyan on the object. There is a level of a chayav. It's not a level of, shall we say, gneva, which means that I locked up my house and nevertheless the ganav somehow dug under, you know, the Baba Machteris and he took the object. That level doesn't exist. But in the Shomer Chinam, there is a level of achrayus, and therefore I make a kinyan on it. Some Rishonim would say in that case, I'm chayef for Bali Rabbi Motzeh. And that's going to be the subject of this lecture and the sugya on Daf Hey. Now, there's a lower level where I have vested interest in returning the object. It could be that in a very extreme kind of pshia, I would be responsible to pay you even though I never made a kinyan on the object. There was never a formal kabbalah sachrayis. All I said to you was hanach lefana, you know, put it down in front of me somewhere in the house. Go find the corner and lock it up. So my again, my knee-jerk response to your question in the context of the Gaon is that even if there's no Kabbalah Sachrais, the fact that Chometz is my Bershus makes me into a vested interest that this Chometz should survive Pesach, so that if you don't come and collect it before Pesach or during Pesach, which Chas V'Shalom, you're not going to come around during Pesach, I'm going to be able to return the Chometz after Pesach.
But even if I don't return it, there's no repercussion.
So that's what I want. Right? You know, for that, that's why I told you the repercussion. There might be what's called a very high level Pshia. Not the Pshia of a Shomer Chinam, which is called Pshia because of a Kabbalah Sachrayus and a Kinyan, but a level of Pshia, which means, what shall I say, I opened up the doors and I said, "Kol bichvin yeseh v'yechal." Yeah, I got a bottle of whiskey, anybody come in. That's called more, again, there's so many concepts here in Chol Shem Mishpat we have to know, but that's called a mazik.
Right.
A mazik. Now, it could be the Shomer Chinam is chayev for Pshia, even if he's not a mazik. If he didn't put a double lock on the door, that itself might be Pshia of a Shomer Chinam. In a case of a Shomer Soch who's paid, he might be chayev if he put 50 locks on the door because Houdini broke into his house. And he's chayev for that as well. That's already Karav Leones, but yet he's chayev because he's paid for it. In the case of a Shomer Chinam, it's got to be some level of Pshia, not the most extreme level of Pshia. But again, I'm just fumfering here because I'm not in the Sugi Vachrayus. But what I'm trying, the goal that I'm trying to reach is that if your Chometz is a Marishus, I invest an interest in returning it. Would I have to pay if I don't return it? Das Vesa. I don't know, for that you have to know what happens. If I open it in such a way that I'm a Karav Lamazik, then it could be that I invest an interest in making sure that the doors are locked. Because if I don't lock the doors, I'm like a mazik. And that touches on another sugya in Chol Shem Mishpat, which is called Grom bin Ezekiel. You know, I never really destroyed it, but it's Grom.
Because you can open up a guy's door and not be chayiv either. I can open up your doors, so I'm not chayiv, it's a Grom.
So I'm not chayiv b'dinei Odo, but I'm chayiv b'din Shemai. Again, my I don't know if anybody knows Rabbi Flegg. His son is married to my daughter, so Rabbi Flegg has a kolel of 150 avreichim. This is not I'm not doing any fundraising here, but you can imagine how much money he has to raise to support 150 avreichim who sit yomam v'layla to study Choshen Mishpat. How many people are in that kolel? 150 people. How long does it take them to graduate the kolel? The minimum, and it was only one or two who managed, was 10 years. Last night I was listening on the radio, which is called Kol Chayim, my way back to Har Nof. They have this, what's the word I'm looking for? A contest of some sort. And there's major money for the person who comes in first in the contest, but it's months and months. And they're studying now the laws of Ribbis. It's unbelievable. I mean, if I told you what conclusion they came to last night on the phone, your hair would stand on end. We're talking about a case where I'm raising funds, and I say to you, please contribute to this fundraising, and I'll do a favor for you. Do you hear what I'm saying? And this is my simchol yom. You know, now they have these cause matches that go on and on and on, and it's endless. So imagine if I call you up and I say to you, Sam, you're a good buddy of mine, please contribute for this cause match, and you know that I'm going to give you a gift. Then it's a question whether I have to say it or I don't. And basically I came to the conclusion that's an Issur d'oraisa of ribbis. Again, I'm not going to go through the detail. D'oraisa of ribbis. It's unreal. I don't know beans about ribbis. My son Binyamin, I don't know if you met him, he studied ribbis in the Mir Yeshiva for a year. And at the end of the year, he said, I need another year. Now, Ribbis represents probably 10% of Chol Shem Mishpat, maybe even less. It's one parak in Bav Metziah. One parak in Bav Metziah.
Yeah, the hardest parak.
Maybe it's the hardest parak, you know, Ezu Nesha. But I'm just telling you, when I shut off the radio last night, I was depressed. I mean, I just... You know, I have a knee-jerk response to what ribbis is. Nothing that I thought was ribbis had anything to do with the truth about ribbis. So it, you know, when we get into these issues of Choshen Mishpat, it's like enormously complicated. Of course, I was depressed for another reason, because when they ended the contest, they had the 10 o'clock news. And you hear about all the different parties that are, that, and I don't even know the names of the parties. I'm so dizzy from the whole thing. As I stand here in front of you today, I have no clue who I'm voting for. Now, of course, you know, if I had a long beard, I'd be voting for Gimel. I mean, that's upgrade. But I don't have such a long beard, so it's certainly, I don't know if I ever voted for Gimel in my life. Maybe once, I think I had no choice. Cause, anyway.
And they let you stay in Harnof.
Listen, before Harnof, Sam, do you know where I lived before Harnof? I lived in Unsdorf. In Unsdorf, no one asks you, where do you work? They only ask you where you learn. I was the only guy on the block, and I'm talking about hundreds of families that had a job and was actually being paid a salary. So you talk about Harnof. Harnof is already the Kal compared to Unsdorf. Yeah, everything is relative.
Where's Unsdorf?
Unsdorf is, if you go past Matersdorf, you know, Matersdorf is pretty from. Right. Pretty from. You know, Rav Scheinberg was there with his boys. Right. Then you go one step, Milan Mikodesh. You get to the real Frumma. That's already Unsdorf. Yeah. Then after that, you hit the Spitz. And that's called Kiryat Sanz Ezra's Torah. Yeah. I mean, there, I can't begin to tell you. I mean, if you're driving through, drive fast, because a guy like me doesn't even get to. Anyway, so getting back, I don't know what happened to me. So what was the last thing? Oh yes, so Sam, you were asking me about that. Okay, fine. Now in the next paragraph, he quotes the Torah Chaim, one of the creative minds of the last, you know, the last period of time in Jewish history. And he assumes that according to Rashi, if Bedikah would have been Doraisa, meaning if there was no Bittel, Hayushneim Ovrim, they would both violate Bal Yirah Bal Yimotzi. So again, as we said before, there are three possible shitas here, if there was no Bittel. One shita is Rabbeinu David, that's the most paradoxical shita. No one would violate Bal Yirah Bal Yimotzi, none of the maskir was so fair. The second shita was Rabbeinu Peretz, the maskir would violate the Chiyuv Bedikah. We had the shita of Rashi, based on the Gaon, that's the socher would violate the Chiyuv Bedikah. And now we have the shita of the Torah Chaim in Rashi that both of them would violate the Bal Yirah Bal Yimotzi. So how many shitas we have? Four, am I right? I'm not very good at math, but I think the number is four. Let's go over it one more time. According to the Rabbeinu David, neither of them are chayav in Bedika. According to Rabbeinu Peretz, the maskir is chayav. I'm sorry, I said Bedika, I meant to say Bal Yirah Bal Yimotzi. So again, according to Rabbeinu David, it's both the maskir, it's neither the maskir nor the socher are in violation of Bal Yirah Bal Yimotzi. According to Rabbeinu Peretz, the maskir is in violation of Bal Yirah Bal Yimotzi. According to Vilna Gaon in Rashi, it's the socher is in violation of Bal Yirah Bal Yimotzi. And according to Torah Chaim in Rashi, it's both the maskir and the socher. So the number is four. And when you're learning Pesachim, you always love the number four. And he says that it's a pella to say that both of them would be in violation of Bal Yirah Bal Yimotzi. Rashi says that if there was no Bittel, it would be crystal clear who would be Chayav in Bedika. Well, tell me, who is going to be Chayav in Bedika if they both are violated Bal Yirah Bal Yimotzi?
That's a crystal clear.
So the Rashi wants to suggest that according to Torah Chaim, you know what was crystal clear? That they're both chayav in Bedika.
And so is the Torah Chaim.
He says in the next paragraph, El Dvar of Pelash, Rashi Hidgish Asofeg Amor Mishum She'enka Nidon Do'orais. So meaning there was Bittel, but had there been no Bittel, there would be no Sofeg in the Gemara. And I forgot to tell you in the previous paragraph that not only does Torah Chaim say this Torah Chaim, but even the Rebbe Elchanan Wasserman says this Torah Chaim. He says Lefi Yaakovet Shiurim. That's Rebbe Elchanan Wasserman. He says Im Hachiv Hoyim Medoraisa Hoyim Mokom Listapek Hayim Asocher O Hamaskir Chayovim Sharei Shneim Ovrim Bebal Yirah. So why does Rashi assume that if there was no Bittel, it would be crystal clear? Eliyeh Shlomar, this is again Rav Ari of Sik. She'i hayo hanidon v'doraisa, according to Rashi, with this Kovet Shiurim and the Torah Chaim, hoya sofe, Lo haya sofek. Why? Mishum sheshneim chayovim bebedika. Because the maskir has bailus and the socher has rishus. Right? We're going with the Vilna Gaon. Ela al chiyuv bedika derabbanan yesh ladun al mi hitilu rabbanan es chiyuv bedika. Now, Rav Osai, this shtickle Torah is against almost everything we've been saying in this sugya from day one. We assumed in Rashi, and possibly even in Tosfos, okay, in Tosfos not, but in Rashi for sure, when Rashi says Torah zel mi mutal, that both the maskir and the socher are equally chayav and bedika. There's ample reason to be chayav the maskir and ample reason to be chayav the socher, which certainly should be crystal clear if you assume that both the maskir and the socher on a deraisa level are liable for bali rabbi matzei. Therefore, they should both be chayav and bedika. Market is slave, market is slave. The maskir because he owns the chametz, and the socher because he's living with the chametz and it's in his rishos. And they're both in violation of bali rabbi matzei according to this fourth possibility. And therefore, the suffix in the Gemara was, since they're both chayiv and bedika, the rabbanon have to find someone and pinpoint that person, because it can't be that both are chayiv and bedika. And the question was, who did they single out here? Who's the kapara hindle? Who's going to be chayiv in the bedika? According to what he's saying here in the Kovach Shiurim, when Rashi implies that had there been no bittul, it would be crystal clear. What would be crystal clear? That both of them are chayiv in bedika. Well, I would say that's exactly the suffix itself. He's saying no. That if there was bittul according to Rashi, then only one of them is chayiv in bedika. And that's against everything we've been saying, because we said that both are chayiv in bedika, and now we have to determine who's going to implement the bedika. Can the socher turn to the maskir and say, look, it's your chametz, you do the bedika? Or the maskir turn to the socher and says, well, you're going to violate by your rabbi matzah because it's in your rishos, you do the bedika. But the way he's presenting it, there's no suffix if you come to the conclusion that they're both chayiv. For example, if there was no bittul and they're both in violation of by your rabbi matzah, then that's not called the suffix. They're both chayiv in bedika. We're saying that no, that's good for the suffix. If they're both chayiv and bedika, who has to implement the bedika?
Yeah, but Rashi's saying it's crystal clear if he made the bedika, right?
No, Rashi's saying it's crystal clear if there was no bittul.
There was no bittul, right?
Then we know for sure who's chayiv and bedika.
Right, but with bedika being the haschalta, the bittul, then the one who made the bedika automatically put himself on the road to doing that.
No, but Alan, you're a step ahead of me. You're saying he already made bedika. We want to try to figure out, before you get to that stage, who's obligated.
That you could say that they're both, yeah.
He's saying that they're both chayiv and bedika. And that was Pasha to Rashi. And we're saying that Adarab, if they're both chayiv and bedika, who has to implement the bedika? That's what we don't know. And if you're going to tell me before bittul they're both chayiv and bedika because they're both liable for bali rabbi matzah, I'm going to ask you, well, who has to do the bedika? And if there was bittul, I'm going to ask you who the rabbanon imposed the chiyuv on and who has to do bedika. But he's saying no. The difference between the deraisa and the rabbanon here is that on a deraisa level, they're both chayiv and bedika, and that's pashut. What do you mean that's pashut? Who's going to do the bedika? So Rav Soloveitchik, if you remember, had this idea that only the socher can do the bedika because he's the only one who has access to the house. But if you leave out that svara, he's telling you that it's a dara posh. They both have to do the bedika. You know what we should do? We should shoot the gun and have a race. Who is going to do the bedika?
Yeah,
I have a feeling that no one's going to
run the other way.
That's right. They can run the other way. No one's going to do the bedika. But that can't happen because if no one does the bedika, they both violate bali rabbi matzah.
But if they both do the bedika,
yeah, I don't know.
They both do the bedika. The one
each one should be voting half the house.
One of them is over and making a bracha l'batala.
Right. Now, in the left column here, he has a chiddush from two Rosh Hashiva together. I don't know if it was a joint effort because they say the same thing of Yeshivas Panovich. Right? This was during the heyday of Panovich, you know, when everybody was, they were all getting along very well. So the Rosh Hashiva was, it's hard to believe. Anyway, so there's Rav Shach and there's Rav Shmuel Rozovsky. Have you heard of Rav Rozovsky? He was an amazing Lamdan. And people in the yeshiva world don't know this, but he had a tremendous admiration for my Rebbe. He had to go to Boston for treatments and he spent a lot of time with Rav Soloveitchik in Boston. And when he left to return to Eretz Yisrael, he said, "I'm depressed because there's no one in Eretz Yisrael I can talk to and learn." I don't know. That I can't tell you. I guess they spoke in learning. I don't know beyond that.
I meant the learning.
Yeah. Well, anyway, he was very much influenced by Reb Shimon Shkab, so it was a slightly different approach. Mm-hmm. But he was a very profound thinker, Reb Shmuel. And very much yeshivish in the sense that he had the classic hakiris and he applied them in a brilliant way. So here he wants to declare, and this is also Reb Shach, what is the nature of the Chiyuv Bedika? And he offers two possibilities. And we've discussed this in the past. So Rav Soloveitchik was very aware of this lumdus. I didn't know that it was also in the world of in the academic halls of Panovich. This I didn't know. What is the nature of Bedikas Chometz? Is it a Chovas Gavra or is it a Chovas Bias? Now let's understand, and we'll fast forward to Mezuzah. The Gemara in the Havamina understood that Mezuzah was a Chovas Bias. And that's why the Gemara was absolutely convinced that logically the maskir should be chayiv in bedika, in mezuzah, insofar as it's his bias. The chiddush of the maskana is that no, there's no such entity as a chovas bias in mezuzah, and therefore the maskir could live till 120 and never put up mezuzahs because he doesn't have the chovas gavra. The fact that the bias is in his possession is not enough to generate the chi of mezuzah. And that's the chiddush of the Gemara that says chovas hadar. Rashi identifies that as bi'oscha v'yitziyoscha, meaning that's a chovas gavra because you go into the house, you go out of the house. The maskir is out of the picture. So we drop the ball on this premise called chovas bias. But in the Havamina, the Gemara thought that the maskir should be chayav in mezuzah because of his chovas bias. The socher, on the other hand, should be chayav in mezuzah because of the chovas gavra, insofar as he enters into the house and he needs the mezuzah. And the Gemara now wants to know which of the two, the maskir or the socher, is going to be chayav in mezuzah. Meaning that the maskir should be chayav in mezuzah because of the chovas bias, it's his bias. The socher is going to be chayav in mezuzah because he's living in the house. And then we have to flip a coin. And the Brisa says that the socher is chayiv in mezuzah. So the Gemara in the Havamina thinks that that's going to shed light on bedikas chometz. What do I mean? In the case of bedikas chometz, the maskir has a chovas gavra, and the socher has a chovas bias. Why? Because the socher is living in the bias. And the Gemara thinks that now we have to vacillate and figure out who should actually be obligated to implement the bedika, the maskir or the socher. And the Gemara points its finger to mezuzah. Because in mezuzah, again, the maskir should be chayv insofar as he has the chovas bias. The socher should be chayv as the chovas gavra. And when we fight it out, lo and behold, the Brisa claims that it establishes that it's the socher who's chayv in bedika. If that be the case, that would shed a light on bedika's chometz. So let me read it to you inside. He says, Muchach mi sugyan, what we have to walk away with from our sugya maskir and socher, is that the chiyuv bedika, sheitilu chachomim, hu chovas habayis. Now this is fascinating because if you talk about the sugya that I mentioned earlier about ha-yotze b'shayara, and he leaves 30 days before the holiday, that's way before the chovas gavra emerges. But the answer is, there's a chovas bias. And that chovas bias emerges with 30 days Karim Lecha. And he says the following. Since we have a chovas bias, therefore the Gemara assumes that Ein Lahatil Al Shneim Chovazu. In other words, we're not dealing with the chovas gavra here. The chovas gavra sort of is neutralized. And what's activated here is the chovas bias. Now we have to decide in the case of a chovas bias, Al mi mutal chovazu. And that means that on the one hand, the bias is owned by the maskir, and therefore he has the chovas bias. On the other hand, the socher is living in the house, and that makes it his bias. So we have a chovas bias in both directions. And the final conclusion will be that we tip the scale in favor of the Chovas Gavra, which means that if the Mesiris Maftechas took place before Yudalid, then when the Chovas Gavra emerges with Tzeis HaKochom of Yudlel Yudalid, it's the Socher who's Chayev now with the Chovas Gavra. Again, as far as the Chovas Bias is concerned, the Masker is equal to the Socher. The Masker because he owns the Bias, and the Socher because he lives in the Bias. But what's going to tip the scale is the Chovas Gavra. Now it all comes down to the following issue. Who is holding on to the Maftechas at the time of Yudal? And Rashi, if you recall, identifies Mesiris Maftechas as a Kinyan Schiris. Hence, the Chovas Bias. But what we're saying now is, according to these two Rashi Yeshiva, that there's an element here of Chovas Gavra, and that is triggered off by the possession of the house at the time of Yudal. Meaning, both the Masker and the Socher equally have possession of the house as far as the Chovas Bias is concerned. But if we want to determine which of the two should be obligated, so initially the Gemara thought we're going to determine based on an equation to Mezuzah, where again, in Mezuzah we have two Machayevim here. We have the Machayev of the Masker insofar as he owns the Bias, the Machayev of the Socher because the Chovas Bias is on him because he lives in the house. And the answer is that the Socher's Chovas Bias trumps that of the Masker. And the same thing is going to apply in Chametz, that even though there's a Chovas Bias on both the Masker and the Socher, the Socher's Chovas Bias is going to trump that of the Masker, and he's going to be Chayv and Bedinka. The Gemara rejects this by saying that in the case of Mezuzah, we have another element, namely the Chovas Gavra, and the Chovas Gavra is exclusive to the Socher, and that has nothing to do with Bedikas Chametz. But the final maskana of the sugya is that Eino Chinami, if there's a tug of war and a stalemate between the Chovas Bias of the Maskir and the Chovas Bias of the Socher, then we have to figure out who has the Chovas Gavra, and that depends upon who has access to the house at the moment that the Chovas Bedika emerges, meaning at Leil Yudal. So if you're holding on to the Maftechas at Leil Yudal, you're Chayv in the Chovas Gavra. If I'm holding on to the Maftechas, I'm Chayv in the Chovas Gavra. And the Chovas Gavra is now the element to tip the scale and determine who has the Chayv Bedika, because as far as Chovas Bias is concerned, they're equal. So we have to introduce the Chovas Gavra. Just give me one more minute. I just want to point out that he, Rav Aryov, is not a happy camper. What's his problem? He says, "Vehine ha'avi Ezri v'Rav Shmuel lo biru sheshneim chayov midoraisa v'bal yirah b'yimotze." In other words, again, we always have to come back to the starting point here. The Rashi insists that there was bittel. If there was no bittel and the chiyuv is doraisa, what would be in that case? And Rashi says it's absolutely certain and it's clear. Well, what was so poshut? So now let's assume that we go to sheet of number 4 over here. That was the Toras Chaim, that both the Masker and the Socher are Chayiv in Bal Yirah B'Yimotze, each one for his own reason. He says the following. Now, we have to understand what would be the clarity, right, the simplicity of the Pshita, if there was no Bittel on a Deraisa level, if they're both liable for violating Bal Yirah B'Yimotze. Who's going to do the Bedika? Why is that Poshut? And he criticizes the presentation here of the Avi Ezri and Rav Shmuel because neither of them answered this question. They don't even address this question. Elarak biaru, all they address is that ia avi chayev midoraisa hoya o hamaskir o asocher chayev bebal yirah. Again, I didn't read their original writings, but it seems that they presented the thesis that in terms of bal yirah b'yimotzi, not like we saw in the Toras Chaim, that both the Masker and the Socher are culpable or liable, but rather one of the two is Chayiv and Bal Yirah B'Yimotze. The Osa Shayachayiv, who are Yachayiv Livdok? Clearly, if there was no Bittel and we're dealing with a violation of the Raisa, that person who violates the Doraisa would be obligated in Bedika. We don't know who that is. So where's the Pshitas over here? The Ein Lahakshos, Sherashi, Savar shechiyuv habedika hu shelo yavra bebal yirah b'yimotze v'kein imi deraisa echad mem chayiv bebal yirah is my duas rabbani yatilu chovas chiyuv al hasheni. In other words, if you're going with the Rashi at the beginning of Masechta Pesachim who identifies the chiyuv bedika with bal yirah b'yimotze, So if Rashi knew that in the absence of Bittul, one of the two, either Maske or the Soch, would be in violation of Al Yerobai Matzeh, then presumably, on a Drabbana level, it would make sense that that person who's in violation of Al Yerobai Matzeh, had he not done Bittul, would now on a Drabbana level be Chayav in Bedika. So therefore, Madu Asher Rabbana Yatilu Chov Aschiv Asheni. What was the tzad in the Gemara to vacillate about this? You know, understand, in Rashi's frame of reference, it was absolutely simple which of the two, the maskir or the soch, would be chayv and bedika if there was no bittul. Now, why don't we apply that same, you know, why don't we point the same finger of guilt at that person as far as the bedika derabban if there was bittul? Meaning, bittul is the beginning of a process, and the rabbanon say that's not the end of the process. In addition to bittul, you need bedika. Let's now ask who would be required to do bittul, because who's on the firing line as far as the violation of Bayi Rabbi Matzah? Yeah, we don't know who that is, but whoever he is, Rashi knew who it was, because Rashi says it was Pshita. Then why wasn't it Pasha that even after bittul, that same person would be Chayav in Bedika, because the Chayav Bedika is built, according to Rashi, in the beginning of the Masechta, Shelo Yavrol of Bayi Rabbi Matzah? If that be the case, we know exactly who fits the bill as far as the Chiyuv Bedika Derabbanan, which is built on Bal Yerobai Matzah, because we know what would be without Bittul and who would be in violation of Bal Yerobai Matzah. So here's where Rav Shmuel and the Avies, they come up with their Chiddush, namely that the Rabbanan introduced a whole new element into the Chiyuv Bedika Schovitz on a Derabbanan level. Until now we were dealing with a Chovitz Gavra that's engendered by Bal Yerobai Matzah. And that would make it crystal clear who has to do the Bedika, because who's ever violating Bal Yerobai Matzah is the Chofetz Gavra Bedika. But now, the Rabbanan are introducing a whole new element into the equation, and that is Chofetz Bayis. Ah, now that it's a Chofetz Bayis, we don't know, that's the vacillation of the Gemara, whose bias is it, as far as Bedika is chometz. Is it the bias of the maskir, insofar as he owns the bias in Choshen Mishpat? Mm-hmm. Or is it the bias of the socher, because the bias as far as Bedika is concerned is the bias of Bedika? The bias of Bedika is the socher's bias, not the maskir's bias. The maskir is the bialim of the bias in abstract terms. But in terms of
access
and material living substance, you know, in a tangible way, whose bias is it vis-a-vis the mitzvah Bedika? And that's got to be the soch. Ubefrat, I'm just going to finish up, and then I just wanted to. Ubefrat lefi atoras chayim shemidereisa shneim over him vada yesh lodun al mihi tilu rabbanis chovas habedika. So now, you know, if we invite the Toras Chaim to enter front stage, now we have a clear cut understanding that there's going to be a suffix in the Gemara Yibaylahu, who on a rabbanon level is obligated to bedika, because if you're going to go back to Rashi Shita, that Bedika is predicated on Bal Yerobai Matzeh, the Toras Chaim says that both the Maskir and the Socher are in violation of Bal Yerobai Matzeh. That was our fourth possibility in our list. Then you could vacillate back and forth. Who would the Rabbanon consider responsible? Is that who or whom? I always forget. Who would be responsible, right? Who would be responsible? Okay? Or upon whom did they impose the responsibility, right? Either way, okay, of Bedika, because, you know, they're both equally in violation of Ayurveda Matzah. Yeah, Yosef.
When we talk about Misirat Maftechot, this is not just a technicality. Misirat Maftechot means who has access and who doesn't have access. I don't assume that the maskir gives over the keys to the socher and still has another set.
Right.
The idea is that once you give over the keys...
He probably does have another set, but anyway. Right. Yeah. You know.
Once you give over the keys, the other person has the access. You don't have the access.
Right. I told you, Rav Salvation makes a big deal about that point. In the context of the Rashi Yeshiva from Panovich, that's irrelevant. Why? Because there's something called a Chovas bias in Bedika. And now we have to determine who owns the bias.
Bias Baduk.
Yeah, so the socher is going to say to the maskir, I'm going to, you know what, you gave me the maftechas, but here, you take the maftechas. You go ahead and do the bedika. Yeah. And the socher is going to step aside and make room for the maskir here, because the socher has no interest in doing the bedika. Now, what gives the socher the right to turn to the maskir and say, you do the bedika, hand the maftechas back? The answer is because this new entity, this new concept, which Panovich Yeshiva invented, but again, I had it way before Panovich, in on 185th Street and what's it called? Audubon Avenue? What's the street that goes up with? No, Amsterdam goes this way, but you know the entrance, the first hall was that way. Yeah. I think it's called Audubon. Yeah. Anyway, whatever. It's a street that if you don't know Spanish, don't even bother walking on the street. Okay. Now I took Spanish in high school for 2 years, but I had a teacher in high school who was one lesson in front ahead of us in Spanish, and he was drunk every other lesson. But anyway, that's not the way you learn Spanish. Anyway, the bottom line is that we're introducing a whole new element, Yosef, and I think this addresses your question. And that's called the Chovas Bias. The Chovas Bias, Rashi identifies with Kinyonim. And you have what's called universal Kinyonim, and then you have Kinyonim vis-a-vis Bedikas Chovas. The Nafkamina is going to be Schirus. So if you ask me in universal Choshe Mishpat terms, who owns the house? It's the Maskir, not the Socher. And I'll prove it to you. That's the top paragraph that we spoke about yesterday.
Owns the house.
Right, that I'm saying that Schiris lo kanya. What do I mean? You have a miktsas kiyum, a quasi-kinyan called Schiris, and it's very meaningful for many dinim. But if you ask me fundamentally who owns the house, despite the quasi-kinyan, the semi-kinyan of the socher, which is called Schiris, the real owner of the house is the maskir. And I'll prove it to you. Because the Gemara establishes in Avodah Zorah, that was the first paragraph on this page, that if the socher is a guy, and he brings his Avodah Zorah into your house, you violate the iser of beisecha. Lo sovi toev el beisecha. It's still considered beisecha. You and I would have said, well, Schiris Kanya, and that it belongs to the guy. The guy is bringing his chametz, he's bringing his avodah zarah, gets into his own house. I'm not responsible for that name. The Gemara says I'm responsible. Why? Because that's called Beisecha. Because Schiris Lo Kanya. When we get to chametz, on a Drabbana level, we're going to flip it around. And we're going to say Schiris Kanya. Maybe because of your svar, Yosef, but I'm just pointing out that there's a stark ahava mina to say that the maskir would be chayav b'dika insofar as he really, really, really owns the house. He's chayav for avodah zarah that comes into the house, it's beisecha. He's now chayav to do the b'dika when his chametz is in the house. Now you'll ask me the following question: how does he get access to the house? The socher is very magnanimous. All of a sudden, he puts his arm around the maskir. I mean, even though he hates his guts, and he says, you know, you're my best friend. Here the maftechus. You go ahead and do the bedikah. The final conclusion of the Gemara is name. It depends upon access. And if the socher received the keys, then schiris kanya. And that's what Rashi points out. What does it mean, schiris kanya? Why did Rashi quote this halacha of schiris kanya with regard to the serious maftechus? So the Rosh Yeshiva Panovich say, because he holds that the Gemara is now introducing a new element into the, a new variable into this constellation called Chiyuv Bedika. Which variable? Chovas Bias. And if the Gemara's maskon is that the socher has to do the Bedika, then it means that as far as Schiris vis-a-vis Bedikas Chavetz, Schiris Kanya. And that's what Rashi emphasizes. Tosfos gets very upset here. Tosfos says, what do you mean? Mesiris Maftechus? Schiris Kanya? That's against everything we know from the Masechta Bava Metzia. But Rashi holds that there's a bezunder halacha with regard to chametz, that the bedika was imposed upon someone who has schirus. And that means that schirus kanya, and therefore the chovas bias, is imposed upon.
But upon the schirus. Because he means dar. Who's dar?
Yeah, but could be.
Have to be schiris.
Could be, like Yosef says, if you're living there, you know, that's enough to make you into the bialim of the bias, certainly as far as chametz is concerned. Then let's just read one more paragraph, then I want to get back to Rav Aaron Kahn. He says the following: Nimtzol fi derech zu shemidaraisa ein suffik mishum shel kol echad yesh chiyuv mitzad atzmo. Again, he's building himself on the Torah's chaim that both the mask and the socher are in violation of Bayiro Bayimotze. And that's Pshita. Again, who's actually going to do the Bedika? I don't know. Maybe they'll have a round robin. I don't know. El Shemid Rabbanan Yesh Ladun al mi hitilu chachamim es habedika hayim al maskir la socher. And the Gemara now proves from mezuzah that if there's a chiyuv that logically should be imposed on both the maskir and the socher, because again, we have a chovas bias in mezuzah, and the maskir is the owner of the house, therefore he is chayiv in mezuzah. The socher, on the other hand, has a chovas gavra because he goes in and out of the house, and yet in this stalemate, the Rabbanan decided that it's the socher's chayiv in mezuzah. And came muchach shechovas habayis shehutlu al socher. Ah, he adds another element into the equation that now we're going to say that even though mezuzah's chovas bias, insofar as Schirus Kanya, again, Schirus Kanya as far as mezuzah is concerned, because again, through the Schirus, he has the benefit of the mezuzah, therefore he's considered the Chovas Bias, and the same thing should apply in the case of Socher. So whenever the Rabbanan have to decide which of two Mechayvim or Chiyuvim, the Maskir and the Socher, comes under the Bias, the answer is the Bias is, although it's a partnership, they both have bialis on this bias to generate a chovas bias, but nevertheless the socher's chiyu is superior to that of the maskir because the chovas bias is imposed upon the socher. V'docha Gemara? No. The Gemara says there's no tzushtel because of our Mesharshia. Mezuzah is a chovas hadar. Right. He quotes the Rashi, Mishar Maso, etc. Hainu, she'ein chovas bias. Forget about your concept of chovas bias, which you thought was the underlying, fundamental machayev in mezuzah. No. Forget about chovas bias. Just bury it. There's no such thing as a chovas bias in mezuzah. El chovas hadar, we'll call it a chovas gavra. Vadir hu a machayev, and therefore there was never a hav meaning that the maskir should be chayev in mezuzah. In the case of chametz, on the other hand, we're saying that there is a chovas bias. The maskir is chayev b'toras chovas bias. Okay, now Rabosa, I'm in a bit of a rush here because I really, really want to study with you pages 31 and 32 and still come back a little bit to this discussion that we started yesterday about Dalit Kosos. And Alan, I still want to answer your question from before. What happens if he makes Kiddush before Tseis HaKochavim with Tosefes Shabbos and Tosefes Yontif, what happens when he gets to the mitzvah Dalit Kosos? Does he have to repeat the Kiddush? Or can he just set up a kos and make a bar priya goffin and just drink it? Because I really think it depends upon this piece. The Rav wants to know, having established that there is shlichus in bedikas chametz, or maybe you don't even need shlichus in bedikas chametz, as we discussed yesterday, great length, what's the deal with bittul? Is there shlichus for bittul? And he divides it into two hakafot. We'll call it hakafa aleph and hakafa bet. In Hakafa Aleph, he presumes, like the Bali HaTosfos, that Bittul equals Hefker. Thus, we have to ask the following question. Can I send you as my shliach to be Mafkir my Nechos? If yes, then I can send you as my shliach for Bittul, because Bittul equals Hefker. If no, then there's no shlichus in Hefker, and ipso facto there's no shlichus in Bittul. Is there shlichus in Hefker, or is there not? This is a gigantic controversy amongst the early Achron, maybe even the late Rishon. The Marit says the following: Kishem she'ein shlichus behegdesh, we'll explain that, is kach ein shlichus behefker. Why? Because we have an overriding principle in shlichus, mili lo memsere l'shlichus. That's a sugyan gittin, if you remember, that deals with the case where I appoint one shliach and then he appoints another shliach. That's called mili. And mili lo mimseri l'shlichus. In the cases of hegdesh and in hefker, that's called mili. It means if I appoint you as my shliach to be magdish, my table, it's invalid. Says the Marit, if it's invalid in the case of Hegdesh, then likewise it's invalid in the case of Hefker. Hefker, no less than Hegdesh, is Mili. Meaning I don't give you anything tangible. I don't give you money to be Makadish and Isha on my behalf. I don't give you money to acquire ownership over Karka. But rather I just tell you, just enunciate Hegdesh, enunciate Bittul. And therefore, if there's no Shlichus in Hegdesh, says the Marit, Mili lo mimsu b'shlichus, then there's no shlichus in hefker, and therefore there's no shlichus in bittel, because we're holding now that bittel is mitam hefker. This point that we just made is the only point that's clear, meaning this is the only point in this long, long presentation that's undeniable, meaning there's a, what we call a syllogism here that's undeniable. And the premise number one is that there's no shlichus in Hegdesh. That's the Marit. You can't deny that. Again, many Rishonim and Achronim will disagree with the Marit. The Marit applies the principle of Mili lo mimsu l'shlichus to Hegdesh. Number two, therefore Hefker doesn't lend itself to shlichus, because that's no different than Hegdesh, meaning in both cases you're dealing with Mili. And number three is, according to Bali Atosis, at least Bittel equals Hefker. Once we've determined that there's no shlichus in Hefker, then ipso facto there's no shlichus in Bittel. Now we go to the other Shita, those who reject the Marit, and they hold that there is shlichus in Hegdesh. L'chora, says Rav Soloveitchik, if you hold that there's shlichus in Hegdesh, and you don't apply the principle of Mili, it will explain why, then there should be shlichus in Hefker, and therefore hence there will be shlichus in Bittel. And he quotes the Ran. If somebody could be kind enough to open up the Ran, it's on page Gimel Amud Beis at the top, who writes that the Bala Iter holds Mistaber de Shliach Mevatel, that to the same extent I can send appoint you as my Shliach for Bedika, I could also appoint you as my Shliach for Bittel. Here's the Bala Iter. He says Mistaber de Shliach Mevatel. Okay, now we're going to see in a minute what was the proof, what was the basis for this conclusion of the Bala Iter. Because again, we've assumed until now, based on the Marit, that there is no shlichus in Bittel. The Ran quotes the Bala Iter that there is shlichus in Bittel. And we're going to see exactly how the Bala Iter, how he derives that conclusion. The Ran in the next part of the Ran says, Achirim Cholkim, there are those who disagree, and they say, the Kevon da Bittul Mitaris Hefker Nogubo, is there's no Shlichus in Hefker, and therefore there's no Shlichus in Bittul, and that was the first presentation that we had in the name of the Ma'arit. But now we're presenting the Bala Iter Shita, there is Shlichus in Bittul, and presumably, says the Rav, there would be Shlichus, according to the Shita, in Hegdesh. What's the common denominator here? He says that in Hegdesh you transfer ownership over your possession, right? I say this table is mine, Hareza Hegdesh, now belongs to Hegdesh. And that accomplishment of a Chalos Hakna lends itself to Shlichus, according to this particular Shita. So it's not Mili. Mili means that there's no transfer of ownership. There's no Das Machna. But here, in the case of Hegdesh, since there's Das Machna, just the Torah said you could achieve that even without a Maisa Kinyan, through Mili, is Misiyami Rosal, Hegdesh, Kimisi Rosal, Gavod. Therefore, you can send a Shliach, because the absence of a Maisa, known as Mili here, is a very powerful tool, because through this Mili we have a Mesira Lehegdesh.
How can you compare?
And Hefker he wants to compare.
Oh. Why do you get Hefker from that?
Excellent.
Because okay. There's a Kimsi Rosal.
So that's going to be the Rav's analysis of the Bala Iter. The Rav is going to say that even if we grant the Bala Iter's premise that there is Shlichus in Hegdesh, that doesn't generate the conclusion that there'll be Shlichus in Hefker. And he's going to make a fundamental distinction between Hegdesh and Hefker, and we'll get to that in just a minute. The second part, which I called Hakofa Bet, and I would have pressed the return button, that starts here about line 7 with the words V'yim Bittel, Eino Din Hefker. Now he goes on to the Ramban's trend of thinking, that Bittel should not be identified with Hefker. You may remember that the Ramban has like 5 proofs that Bittel is not Hefker, but rather Bittel is when a person gives up on his chametz and he says, you know what, I don't want the chametz. It's like Yeyush and Aveda, if you remember our discussion in the Ramban.
Right.
And that has nothing to do with Hefker. So again, if we go back to the Bala Iter, who says that there's Shlichus in Bittel, just like there's Shlichus in Hefker, then you're assuming that Bittel equals Hefker. And if Bittel is Hefker, you're talking about a more classic Hakna. Again, it was through Dibur, through Amira, but nevertheless it creates a change of ownership, and therefore lends itself to Shlichus. That's the Bala'i. But now we're introducing the Ramban Shita. The Ramban Shita is that Bittul is not operative within the framework of Hafkas Mamon, but rather Bittul means some sort of a Yerush, some sort of a Lo Nichole, or call it in Rots of the Kiyumo, whatever it might be. And that doesn't lend itself to Shlichus. Why? Because Eina Rotsa Bekiyumo has to be a personal expression of the fact. Again, it could be that if I point to Shliach, that itself means I'm Eina Rotsa Bekiyumo. Leave that out for a moment. But if the formal Bittul is a declaration of Eina Rotsa Bekiyumo, then Rav Soloveitchik says that Shlichus is out. But at this point, he brings a stira in the Mechaber. Do we have here Mishnah Berurah Chelek Hey? I saw one before.
Is there an unspoken issue over here whether Hefker is just the silk of your Bibles? Because that's what you imply. Yeah,
he said there always
has to be an owner, and the owner is nobody. Yeah. Hefker is a nobody.
Right.
And what you're saying now is the next paragraph, the Bir Agra.
Right.
The Bir Agra says, but in the meantime, Yosef, you can open up two Shulchan Aruch here and find the stira.
This is technical. Ain't there right? That's technical.
One is Simon Tuf Lamed Beis. Tuf Lamed Beis. All right, we'll call it 432. Okay, Sif Beis. And the other one is Tuf Lamed Dalid, 434. Sif Dalid. Okay, so see if you can find those two paragraphs. But let me go on to the Gaon. The Gaon says that the source for Shlichus in Bittul is the Gemara Nidarim, and that's what the Ran quotes here for the Bala Itu. A sugya in Nidarim. Again, this sugya also appears at the end of Bava Metzia. It's in two places. And this opens up a fantastic sugya unto itself. The sugya in the Darim, which again, as I said, is also Bava Metzia, addresses what's called hafara, which means that the husband has a right within a certain time framework to be mevatel his wife's neder, and he could also make a shliach to do so. So the Gemara says that. Just one second. Where is the Gemara? I don't see it right now, but it's coming up a little bit later on in this paragraph. That, oh, here it is. Ha'omer la'petropis called nidarim shetei ishti no deres hafer la, which means he makes a general declaration appointing the apotropis to relate to all the nidarim that his wife will ever take and be mefer them. And according to Rabbi Yonasan in the Gemara Nidarim, Mosrim l'shlucho shel adam kimosa. Just one second. I'm sorry, not Mosrim, but Mofirim. Mufarim. Okay, the Hebrew's a little bit writing.
Mefirim.
Yeah, Mefirim. In other words, shlucho shel adam kimosa applies to hafaras nidarim. And now the Bala Itur is going to make the following analogy. If there's shlichus in hafaras nidarim, then there's shlichus in bittul. That Bittul is similar to Hafaras Nedarim in the Bala Itur. Now here, we have a comment of the Gaon. The Gaon says that he doesn't believe that that Sugya in Hafaras Nedarim, again, it's against the Bala Itur, could possibly be a basis for our conclusion that Shlichus, since it works by Hafaras Nedarim, should work by Bittul. And the reason for that is the following. He says that shlichus only operates kishabba litzar mashu. He's creating a new chalos. Lahavos chalos chadasha, or dover chadash, totzah chadasha. Like for example, kiddushin, you're creating issues, in gerushin, you're breaking up issues, but there's some new chalos that's being established, and you can now appoint your shliach to represent you to bring about that new creation, that new chalos. Aval kan, but here in the case of Bittul, eino mahave chalos, he's not generating a brand new chalos. Elamaskia, I would call it Mesalik, that was Sam's word, Chalos. That's called Bittul. Im Kain, Minolon, the Gamzetoil Shlichus, Gambozetoil Shlichus. So he's saying the following, that if you compare Bittul to your classical Shlich, classic Shlichus, there's a great gap between classic Shlichus and Bittul. In Bittul, you're removing your interest in the chametz. You're not creating some new entity, some new halos. And clearly, says the Gaon, there's no shlichus.
Why would you need shlichus?
Just 1 second. Lachem, therefore, the Gaon says that if there's a basis for the conclusion of the Valaitur that there is shlichus in Bittul, you're going to have to find it and discover it in the case of Nedarim. Because again, in Hafaras Nedarim, is he creating something new, or he's just being Masalik something, or being Mavatel something?
Mavatel and Masalik is not necessarily the same.
Okay. I knew you were going to catch that.
I'm sorry.
But no, I'm just trying to, you know, I'm just trying to develop the trend of thinking of the Gaon. The Gaon thinks, Lachain Hevi Agra, Sugya de Nedarim, it's also in Perek HaShol in Bav Metzia, the Amusham, the Imshalach Aval Shliach, Ba'ado. Okay, so this has to do with Bav Metzia, that's called the Bible of Imam. We're not ready for that. And the Gemara says, Ha'omer la Petropis, Kol Nedarim Shetehe Ishti Noderes Haferla. And Rabbi Yonason says, Mufarim, Shlucho Shalom Kimoso. Ule Idoch Mandi Omar, the Bar Plukta Rabbi Yonason, who says that there is no such thing as not Petropis being made for Nedarim. Is Yeshol Gzeres HaKosim Yuchedes, the Gemara quotes a Yalfusa, that in the case of Afara, there's no Shluko Shalom Kimosa. But as far as the original concept, which has implications again in the Bail of Imo, that's a sugya with regard to Chiv Tashlume Shomer, there, Enochinami, everybody agrees, in the absence of Gzeres Shova, that there is Shlichus. He says, Kevan de Moel Benidarim, may Ikra de Dina, meaning without the Xeris Hakosu, the Hainu Hafkos Halos Nidre Aisha. And you're right, he doesn't use the word Siluk, he uses the word Hafka. As Gam Moel, I guess it means Shlichus here, the word Moel, I think, is the word Shlichus missing it. Gam Moel Shlichus Lafkia Halos Chiyuv She'ela, again in the case of She'ela. And in the case of chametz, to be mafkia, the chalos chiyuv chametz.
Chiyuv she'ela, can just...
Yeah, I don't know. You're going to have to give me a little time work it out. Again, Baal Avimo is always very confusing.
Okay. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. It's my fault, not your fault. But I didn't get a chance to prepare the sugya of Baal Avimo. It's a whole sugya. It's like what I told you before, Choshev Mishpat is just endless. Baal Avimo is a very complicated sugya. It's one of the main sugyas in Perek HaShoel. I never officially learned Perek HaShoel in my life, believe it or not. I mean, I did it for Daf Yomi, but, you know, Baal Avimo. Rabbi Simcha has full Torahs on the Baal Avimo. Anyway, so he says the following. He says that... There are two ways of being mafkia, the neder of his wife. One is hafara, which is a verbal declaration, and then there's something called kfiya. Kfiya means an action, and that action destroys the neder.
What is the word kfiya?
Kfiya. Chaf, pei, yud, yud, hei. Can you write that down? Chaf, pei, yud yud he. Let me explain what that means. Here's the case.
Is you're forcing it.
Correct. Yeah. He never actually declared that her neder should be batel. What he did was, he forced her to violate the neder. Right? So let's say, for example, she took a neder that she would not eat something, and he takes the food, and he, again, it doesn't mean physically, but he says to her, eat the food. Then the neder is batel. Now, what's the difference between these two categories of hafara? He says the following.
In hafara, he's uprooting it from the inception.
Right.
And here, he's just demonstrating that it's not chal.
Right, so in the case of Hafara, he indicates that he's not happy with the neder. He calls it a declaration of I Ritzono. He's not happy with the neder.
So that's starting from when?
As soon as he says Mufar Lo.
But
now we have another category, which he says is not dependent upon any verbal declaration. And that's the case of Kfir. He says, in this case, he's Mavatel through Iritzono B'Neder. Again, even though there was no declaration, but the very fact that he wants to eat and violate the Neder, that itself is a gili milsa, so to speak, and he doesn't use that term, but of iritzono benidra, and that's mafkia the neder.
From when?
I don't know. Whenever it is. See, I don't have to make his guidance of the Klish Kolish. I mean, again, I'm not learning the Dharam here. Yeah, these are full sugyas in the Dharam. But the point that he's making here, I want you to get the punchline here, that this is going to help us with bittul, because there are two categories of bittul in the darim, you know, a husband vis-a-vis his wife's neder. And he says that in order to indicate that he's not happy with her neder, we need some sort of an action. So you'll see on the bottom line on page 31, Tzrichim hochacham asit. You see that? Bahainu hakfir. So the kfir represents a physical action that demonstrates that he's not happy with this neder. Ha'afara, ha'yef shaloma, desham etzem ha'mira. Now we turn to page 32. Etzem bitu ya'afara, in other words, the what's it called? The
enunciation of the
Mifta Svasayim, right? The Mifta Svasayim.
Yeah.
That's mafkir the neder. But the Rambam seems to equate these two categories of ha'afara. In one category, the hafara, he expresses verbally the fact that he doesn't want this neder, he wants to invalidate the neder.
Right.
And in the other case, he expresses his iratzon, his distaste or not happy with the neder, through an act of hafara, an act of bittul, which is called kfir, that he forces her to violate the neder. So he wants to say the following, that maybe the issue of shlichus in bittul and the equation of the Baal HaItur with this sugya of hafara, where you can send a shliach, would really depend upon these two categories of hafara. He says the following: if the only category of hafara would have been a classic hafara, then that's called mili, and it wouldn't be shlichus. However, if there's another category of hafara through a maisa, then when it comes to shlichus, we need a maisa. The shliach is going to do the maisa bittul. He's going to do the pu'ula, so to speak.
Which is
kfir. In other words, feeding her the food that she took upon herself not to eat. And he writes the following. He says, there's bittul ayidei amira, in the case of the Dharma, and there's bittul ayidei maisa. He says the following. We get back to the Gaon's point from before. He says, Yuvan. Lo mistaber shebitzir de mefer ashliach in the classic hafara, and the shliach is now appointed as the agent of the mais hafara, meaning the dibur of hafara. Yahani, it doesn't make sense that shliach should be operative. Why? Because it's just a matter of iritzono, but there's no actual action. There's no mais. So what does the Gemara mean when the Gemara postulates that there is such a thing as shlichus in Afaras Nedarim? Remember the case of Rabbi Yonasan with the Apotropis. And how is that going to serve as a proof for the Baal HaItur in Bittul Chametz? So Rav Soloveitchik wants to suggest that there are two ways of defining shlichus. One is Shlucho Shalom Kimoso, where I appoint you to do a maisa on my behalf. And the other, he says, is where you just express on my behalf my ratzon, or in this case, my iratzon. That's a brand new category of shlichus. That's not classic shlichus of a maisa. He says, in this context, what is shlichus? Shlichus is a tziruf, some sort of connection between the Meshaleach and the Shliach. So it's not your classic Shlichus of the Mice of the Shliach is like the Mice of the Meshaleach. But rather there's a certain Ratzon of the Baal, the Meshaleach, and the Shliach is going to express that Ratzon. He says the following, Belig Zeres HaKosuv, if not for a special Pasuk, Hayinu Omrim, we should have concluded that Shlichus of this category. Hayinu Omrim Sheshlichus Misug Zetoil. In other words, we don't even need the parsha of Shlichus. You remember we spoke about this with regard to Bedika yesterday, that it could be that Bedika doesn't require Shlichus. Even a cut might be able to do the Bedika. He says that in this case, it would be absolutely critical that the Mishaleach is lucid at the time that the Shlichus does the Hafara. Why? Because this is not your classic Shlichus. In the classic Shlichus, I can appoint the Shliach as taking over for me. He's in the driver's seat. Like, for example, in Get, according to the Torah at least, even if the Baal becomes a Shoter and he has no Das, the Shliach could still deliver the Get on his behalf. Why? Because the Shliach takes over the Baalus. He becomes he sits in the driver's seat. That's because you have Shlichus of a Maisa. And that's the Gzeres HaKosuv of Shlichus Shalom Kimoso, which can only apply. I'm sorry, which can apply even if, that's what I meant to say, even if the Mishaleach is a Shoter. But now we have a case of a new category of Shlichus, where the Shliach is just expressing on behalf of the Mishaleach his Ratzon, his Das. In the case of the Nedarim, he's expressing his objection to the Neder. In that case, then it's critical that the Mishaleach be lucid, he be a Pikeach, at the time of the implementation of the Shlichus. Because basically, the Shliach is not the Baal Dover here. He doesn't sit in the driver's seat. He's just an extension of the Mishaleach.
Who has to be able himself.
Correct. Because again, it's really the Mishaleach who's doing the act of Hafara, which means expressing his what's the word I was, indignation, or whatever the word is, about vis-a-vis the Neder.
Dissatisfaction.
And the Shliach is just expressing it on his behalf, but it's really the Mishaleach who's doing the action. The Shliach is a pawn in the hands of the Mishaleach. He's not the Baal Dover, as we said before in the case of Get. He says, the Beget, Ein Lefarshin is Sinas HaShliach Hu Mitzurf LaBaal, as if the Baal himself is giving the Get. No, the Shliach is giving the Get, but he becomes the Baalim over the Get because of Shlucho Shalom Kiboso. He says the following. Okay, this is the Bab Metzia part. I'm just skipping that. Let's see where I can pick this up. He says, Shigama Yede Shliach Yecholim HaBailim. He says, let me see if I can skip to this line. Ze Adimyo, how are we doing on the clock? I'm just. Ze Adimyo LeBittel. HaShliach Ose. Maisa bittel pirish tzarch levatlo b'dibur. So all we have is dibur here. Upshita delo sagi v'bittel hashliach belibo. Okay, he lays down a premise. I'm not exactly sure how he knows this. That although the original owner, the mishalech, he could be mevata belev because bittel belev sagi, but as far as the shliach, he needs to express it in words.
It's not a maisa, it's a dibur.
Yeah. The zemet suraf lebitul belev shel bala chametz. In other words, the only way I can link up the bitul of the shliach to the mishaleach is if the shliach expresses that bitul with an explicit dibur, and then that becomes connected to the bittul belev of the Baal HaShliach. Again, it would be absolutely critical to the Baal HaChometz, meaning that the Baal HaChometz is awake and he's aware and he's lucid. V'ayinu sh'aminu shlichus mora, just the next word I can't make out.
Oh, mora.
What is that, a hay or a tough? What is it? Anyway, Sherotze Bibitul Chemso. The O Dieno Rotze Shabitul Yochel Achiyasa Shliach Maisabitul. You know, he's worried, why do I need the Shliach? If the appointment of Shlichus itself is a demonstration that, oh, I see, Chada. Okay, fine. In other words, there are two elements here that make up the efficacy of the shlichus of the shliach in bittul. Number one, it means that the minui itself indicates that he, the Baal HaChometz, is interested in bittul. And number two, viod, that the fact that he appoints the shliach to do the bittul, that is in the opposite direction, a gilui that he doesn't want the bittul to be chal based on the fact that he expressed his dissatisfaction, as you said before, with the chametz. Achiyasa shliach ma'isa bittul. He's holding it up in abeyance until the shliach does the ma'isa bittul.
Right, because he knows that they're going to eat breakfast.
Oh, he wants to connect this back to bedikas chametz. Remember, bedikas chametz was also that kind of new parasha of shlichus, where the bodek is the shliach habodek is the extended arm of the mishalech, and therefore it's really the mishalech who's doing the bedika, and therefore even if the katan is actually doing the bedika, but al pi din it's the mishalech, the gadol, who's doing the bedika. And the same thing could apply here in the case of bittul, that even though the shliach is doing the ma'aseh bittul, but he's only doing it such as an extension of the baal, and the nafkamina is going to be with katan. That lefi zeh is gam bekat niya kosher l'shlichut zu.
I have these two halachot if you want them.
So let's see if we can appreciate the summary at the end of this presentation. In the next paragraph, he says, Yesh lomad delar amban, there's no ma'aseh bittul, and therefore there should be no shlichus. And it's not like the case of Hafara, where we said that there was a Maisa Hafara. I think he's referring to the Kfiyah case. And therefore, Yosef Niradim ain bittul midin hefker. If we hold like the Ramban, a bittul does not equal hefker, lo be'inon shlichus. So therefore, if there's no Maisa, and it's not a Kenyan, it's not a Akno, the Dasmach like hefker, therefore it's only like Hafara, where he expresses the fact that he's not interested. Lo eino rotzeh. Here we're going to have to introduce an entirely different category of shlichus, because again, shlichus doesn't apply to eino rotze b'kiyumo, or in the case of hafara, eino rotze b'neder ishto. That could not lend itself to classic shlichus because there's no maisa. So what are we dealing with then? We're dealing with a new kind of shlichus, where we don't really need an appointment of a shliach. And not only that, the shliach himself might not be royal shlichus in the universal sense. And then, the meaning of this shlichus, which is simply a way of expressing the fact that he wants this person to do the bittul on his behalf, is mitzuref lebittul sha'osa shliach. He says we're going to attach or connect the bittul of the shliach together with the Baal HaChametz. Okay, Rabosai, we have to go over this one more time, because again we have this fine distinction between Hafara al Yidei Iritzono, which means a dibur, and Hafara al Yidei Mais in the case of Kfiya. So we'll try to integrate that into this discussion. And then what I'd like to cover next week is the sugya of chazakas. In other words, do I assume that a person actually checked the house? And that's going to introduce the whole sugya nemanus. You know, who's believed to say that the house was checked? And then we'll get to Mirtz Hashem, Belineda, the sugya of achrayus, and Shomer Chinam, Shomer Socher, and the entire discussion. So I'll take this opportunity to wish everyone a great Shabbos. And hopefully we don't repeat the sins of Parshas Kitisa, and we'll be zocher b'yitzchem to the ultimate geula. That's what I spoke about in my Chumash class. Yeah.